My name is Carly Dallas. If you're here to hear about an oasis in Mexico, you're in the right place. And if not, you can feel free to leave or stay. That's fine with me. But I'm just going to jump right in and get started. Somebody know how to make this a slide view?
Does it say Ren slideshow?
No. So this picture obviously is an oasis. Literally an oasis is this. It's a fertile spot normally with water in the middle of a desert. A desert with no water, a desert with no life, a place of suffering where somebody has to trek long amounts of time in order to get to a place where they can finally rest, finally find life, and finally relax. So more figuratively, I guess an oasis is shelter, refuge, joy, vibrance, abundance, all of these things that you'll find in a place of despair, depression, dryness, and darkness. So what I want to talk about is an oasis. This is another visual of an oasis. But what I want to spend most of this time talking about is a place called the Oasis After School Program. And I want to first paint the picture of the context of this environment, of where this place is located, because I think if you understand where this place is located, you'll see a lot more why it is an oasis, not just physically, but in a more figurative sense as well. So I'm going to start by describing the area where this place is found. It's a town called Vicente Guerrero, which is in Baja California, Mexico. So it's pretty much straight south of where we are now. You follow the Pacific Coast Highway.
Hi.
You just keep following the Pacific Coast Highway south about 5 hours after the border. So the first biggest city you encounter is Tijuana, which is not a very nice place to hang around. But then you continue about another hour and a half south on this beautiful coastal highway. You get to Ensenada. And that's a really nice touristy town, the big port, tourist ships come in there, big cruise ships. Then you get past that city and you hit the country, and there's beautiful vineyards, there's farms, there's miles and miles of strawberry fields, beautiful, beautiful landscape, tons of agriculture. And you get to this tiny little town called Vicente Guerrero, and they estimate the population is about 15,000. No one really knows for sure, but it's definitely growing right now. But I want to talk about some of the characteristics of this area and then describe the program that exists in it. So the area, widespread poverty, people know what poverty looks like. It's lack of basic needs, food, shelter, water, all of those things. And what I think most distinguishes this area is a huge gap between the rich and the poor. It's basically like the lords and the serfs. You have the nice, beautiful home up on a hill where the ranchers live, the landowners, with a complete gated compound with cameras and a tennis court in the back. And then you have the day laborers, the field workers, who are the people who are in these pictures, this picture right here, who spend 8 to 10 hours a day bent over like that picking strawberries. And they get paid about 80 cents per box of strawberries that they fill up. So they get a box about this big, and they have to fill up that box, and they get about 80 cents for that. And you know, in the grocery stores, you buy these little boxes of strawberries for $2.99, $3.99. And I think in one of these big boxes, you could fit about 50 of those. So you can do the math there. But that is pretty much sums up the majority of this population. You have the majority of the population who are the day laborers who work. They make about $8 to $10 a day. They don't have a lot of benefits outside of that. A lot of them work 7 days a week to get that extra money. And you have the rich people who own all the land. And that is so obvious. There is not a middle class. There's a very, very tiny middle class. But you can imagine it's just very hard for these people to progress anywhere in their life when they spend every day what they earn that day. So poor job economy and low wages. The job economy outside of the agricultural field, there aren't very many jobs. There's a job at a gas station, a job at a convenience store, maybe a job at a school as a teacher, and that's about it. There's not a lot of other industries in the area. And as such, with poverty come a lot of these other problems that are often involved, including substance abuse, domestic violence, lots of teen pregnancy. We have 13, 14-year-old girls who are pregnant. It's not uncommon at all down there. And a lot of single moms, broken up families. And the other most obvious thing you'll notice in this area is just the lack of resources. There aren't hospitals around. There aren't many universities. There aren't a lot of these safety nets that we have in our society and our culture to help families that are in need when they need it. So there's just not options. You wonder, well, what's a single mom going to do with four kids? She doesn't know. There's not much to do. If she doesn't have any family in town, no options. You're stuck. So to go along with that, Mexico in general doesn't have the best infrastructure, or where we are, water is a huge issue. All the drinking water is trucked in. So imagine huge trucks bringing in purified drinking water. There isn't a lot of plumbing. The roads are terrible. There's one paved road. The one paved road is the one highway that runs north and south on the peninsula. And just lack of development. So now that you kind of understand what this area looks like, I'm going to show you a really short video about this place that is called Oasis, the Oasis After School Program. It's 2.5 minutes, just so you can see a small visual of the place that I work at.
Addictions or broken families. I don't have to describe poverty. You know what it looks like. I don't have to describe abuse, addictions, or broken families. I don't have to describe cute kids. You know what they look like. I don't even have to describe Mexico. A lot of you are familiar with it. But in this dusty, dry, often depressing town, there is a special place very dear to my heart. An oasis I would like to describe. Directions here often go like this. Drive up the boulevard, turn right at the yellow corner store, drive down the dirt road, past the graffitied hospital wall, and you'll see it right in front of you, the colorful Oasis building. Come inside and you'll find a vibrant, joyful place filled with kids. It's a community after-school program designed to mentor and tutor kids in one of the roughest neighborhoods in town. So, what's a day like at Oasis? Well, there's the usual activities. We take attendance, make coffee, help kids do their homework, do arts and crafts, teach kids to use computers, teach English and nutrition, serve the kids a nice meal, teach the kids about the Bible, and watch kids play. And then there's also the not-so-fun things, like organizing the closet, fixing broken things, and my least favorite part of the day, sending the kids home, closing the gate, and releasing the guard dog. Though most days follow the same basic routine, as I drive away each day, I like to think about special moments. Moments like this, watching one of our teen girls give her life to Christ and get baptized. My favorite thing about Oasis is that the kids come on their own. They want to be here. And when they come to us, we can guide them and help them run to the true Oasis we find only in Jesus.
So I'm going to tell you a little bit more about Oasis in detail. The mission statement, there it is. Oasis partners with communities to create hope and opportunity for children and their families by providing education, mentoring, nutrition, and love. So how do we do that? One thing that I think is often taken for granted is the fact that we just provide a safe place for the kids to be. And that doesn't seem like a really big deal, but in this particular community, the kids, either when they're in their homes or on the streets, they're susceptible to a lot of dangers that could really harm them in their life. And even when they're in their home, often you'll see a six-year-old taking care of a four-year-old and the four-year-old taking care of the two-year-old, because the mom and dad are out working in the fields till 6 p.m. and the kids get out of school at 12:30. So the reason this after-school program was created in the first place was because we realized this huge vulnerable window of time when children were wandering around on the streets, little kids, and there's nothing for them to do, there's nowhere for them to go. So this is an enclosed facility, you could see in the video, where the kids can just come and play. They can be a kid. They can act like a kid and not worry about what's going to happen to them or if someone's going to take them or if someone's going to harm them. So that's really one of the main aspects of this program. And the second is that we provide them with a meal. So while they're there, all of them get to eat. And this is often the best meal that they get to eat. It's a nutritious meal. And most of these kids are eating basic staples every day, like tortillas and beans. That's what they eat every day. They don't get fruit. They don't get a lot of vegetables. They don't get a lot of meat. So at Oasis, we provide those things for them, and they eat every day that they're there, at least once. And the tutoring and the teaching, it is an educational program, so we're helping make sure that these kids are actually learning and they're staying on grade level. We've seen a lot of issues in the public school system there, and we have 12 or 13-year-olds who are leaving elementary school and don't know how to read. So that's really shocking when you ask a 12-year-old how many books they've read, and they said zero. And so the tutoring and the teaching, that's a huge part of the program. And then life skills in general. We teach about hygiene, nutrition, you know, you need to brush your teeth. We try to provide things like that, because in this area, it's really hard for a family to spend $3 or $4 on a tube of toothpaste. It's just not, when they're hungry, they're not going to spend money on something like that. And the Bible classes, each day that the kids are there, we teach them about the Bible. And one of the exciting things in that video is a few weeks ago, two teenage girls decided to get baptized. And that was as a result of some teen conferences that we've been doing with the teen girls. And over a period of 6 months, a lady was coming down from the States and working with these same teen girls three separate times in these conferences. And at the end, they talked about baptism. And seven girls expressed a desire to get baptized. And two of them did it right then. But the others wanted to wait for their family members and to have more of a celebration. So they're still planning to get baptized, and that'll happen soon. And one exciting thing about this whole program is that we're connected to a local Church of Christ. There's a mission organization called Baja Missions, which actually grew out of what is called the City of Children, where he is the director. So it's nice to see you here. But that's actually a good spot for me to talk about how I got here and how I got involved in this, was because I was a 13-year-old little teenage girl in a youth group from Providence Road, North Carolina, and Providence Road Church of Christ in Charlotte, North Carolina. And so Jeff Walling was my preacher. I heard him my whole life. I was blessed to hear him preaching all the time. But I was in their youth group, and they were taking a trip down to the City of Children. And I decided that I would go, but my dad wouldn't let me. So he decided our whole family would have to go. And so my mother and my brother and my dad, we all went on this mission trip, and that trip really did change my life. And it wasn't really seeing the cute kids and the cute orphanage and everything happy. It was a particular day when they planned an outing for us, and we left the orphanage, and we went into a slum town in one of the surrounding neighborhoods of this orphanage to see where some of those kids had come from. And I have these very vivid images in my head of seeing little babies on the ground in the dirt with flies all around them, kids stuffing hot dogs in their pockets. We were serving a hot dog lunch, just stuffing as many hot dogs as they could in their pockets, stuffing them in their mouth. And I was from this nice home, this nice childhood, from this nice society where everything's beautiful and perfect and pretty. And here I was, a 13-year-old girl, looking at this stuff, just like, wow, this is crazy. People live like this. And they don't live like this here. They live like this all over the world. And then I go back and get on a plane, fly across the country, go back to my church, my pretty picture-perfect life, and I'm looking at my closet with all these clothes in it, and I'm looking at this house and these cars, and I was just like, this is just so hard to act normal, to act like I never had this experience before, to act like there aren't people in the world who suffer daily to have a drink of water. So I was 13, and then I got angry. I got angry at the world, and I had all these weird emotions about having motivations of knowing what I wanted to do and how I wanted to help, but then not really quite being able to do that because I was a 13-year-old girl. So it was very strange that for a time there in my teenage years, there was a lot of emotional conflict because I felt great motivation, but I felt great obstacles being a teenager and having all these expectations and things I had to do, and you have to finish school and you have to go to college and you have to do this and that, follow the path. So I followed the path and I graduated from here, from Pepperdine, in 2011. All the while, since I was 13 till when I graduated when I was 22, I went to Mexico as many times as I could. I think I went 3 times a year when I was in middle school, high school. One of the great appeals of coming out here to Pepperdine was that I was very close to Baja California. So the whole time I was here, I would meet up with groups, go down to the City of Children, get in a van, and head down south to this little town. And the really cool thing was that I did spend a lot of time at the City of Children when I was in the youth group, but eventually Baja Missions formed. And Baja Missions is a Church of Christ-based organization that plants churches down the Baja coast in these little towns. So they have this network of churches. I think there's 14 now. And there's a little one in every single town down the Baja. And this town where this after-school program is where one of these churches is located. So my youth group then began to visit this little tiny church. It was a baby church. It started in 2005, I think, around then. And eventually, some Americans who were supporting this church decided to buy a piece of land across the street from it because they wanted to reach out to this community. This community is very ugly, very bad, very rough. So they said, there's so much need in this community. What can we do here? How can we use this church to bless this community? So they purchased more land, built the Oasis building, but had no real plan for it. It kind of just sat there. So the building was there, and it was available. It's a beautiful building. It's one of the only buildings in that community with indoor plumbing, which is a huge thing, and with a kitchen, and with gas, and with electricity. So we were like, how can we use this building? And at the time, I actually participated in building it, but I had never imagined I would be the one living there doing anything. I just kept going on these trips over the years. So graduation came around, and people say, what are you going to do next? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Luckily, I had no financial debt, so I didn't have anything really preventing me from finally being able to do what I wanted to do. So I knew something would come up. I knew it would probably involve Mexico. And then an opportunity came up where the people who constructed this building said, we want someone to go down there and start some kind of program. We don't know what. We need someone there. We want to use this building full time. We want to bless this community. So me and another girl, one of my friends, we moved down there in July of 2011, right after I graduated, and I've been there ever since. So we spent a few months researching. We didn't know what to do. We were 22-year-old single white girls in the middle of the desert in Mexico. And it sounds terrible, and it was. For a while, it was very challenging, and we ran into a lot of obstacles and a lot of problems, but God is bigger than problems. So we had not really any support. We had a few businessmen who left us with a wad of cash and the keys to this building, and they said, when you run out of money, let us know, and we'll try to get you some more. And the money ran out, and we didn't get any more for a while. But we spent time researching, listening. We met other ministries in town. We met other missionaries in town. And all of these connections that we made when we first got there really did save us because they supported us, they built us up, and eventually we created this after-school program. And that was only because people said that's what they needed. That's what they... We didn't want to come down there and say, this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to do it for you. It was, what do you really need? How can we use this space? And we talked to families. We walked up and down the streets in that community and asked people, how can we use this space? And they said, our kids are home at 12:30 and we're not home till 6. And we were like, that's perfect. That works for my schedule. I like to sleep in. So it began. And it began with me and that one other girl and about 20 kids and a few volunteers from the local church. And today, it is quite different. Today, there are 100 kids in the program, exactly. I counted yesterday on the attendance list, just to make sure. There are 100 kids in the program. That's kind of our max, because anything beyond that gets really crazy. So Their ages 4 to 15. Our youngest is a little 4-year-old girl who just started kindergarten. And our oldest are 15, 16-year-old girls. After that, it's kind of hard for the high schoolers to come to our program because their schedules down there are a lot like college. They have classes all spread out throughout the day. So one thing we want to think about in the future is how to involve more of the high schoolers, because as it is right now, they can't really benefit from our program. They can't really come. And I want to talk a little bit about the children of these, the particular children in our program in the area where this building's located. I don't know if any of you are familiar with indigenous groups in Mexico, but a large migration happened and is happening in Baja California from southern regions of Mexico like Chiapas and Oaxaca, and there's no work there. People are really suffering. It's a very difficult place to live. So a lot of them hear about Baja. They hear about, oh, in Baja there's work, and they come. Thousands of them come on a bus. It's a 3-day bus ride. They come with nothing. They come with what they can carry on a bus. And I think the latest estimate was that in the past year, 20,000 immigrants arrived from, migrants arrived from the Oaxaca, Chiapas region into the San Quintin Valley, where this building is. That's a lot, because this area is not highly populated. So to just drop 20,000 people in there, it's a noticeable difference. And the problem here is that these indigenous families are often severely discriminated against. They're shorter, they're rounder, they're darker. They speak a different language. They often don't speak Spanish. And they're pushed aside in society. They're over here, and everybody else is over here. So besides this extreme in economic status of rich and poor, you have this added into the mix, the indigenous and then the not. So they experience a lot of problems. I've had problems where indigenous children have been sent home from school because they're a little bit dirtier, because they don't have nicer clothes, and I've asked them, why were you sent home from school? And they say, the teacher told me this or that. And I'll go to the school and I'll speak to the director of the school and I say, why did you send these kids home? And they don't know what to say. And he looked at me dumbfounded, like, I said, you can't by law deny these kids an education. It's in your constitution. And just being a voice and speaking up for them, that's one thing we do at this program. It's kind of, we do a lot of things, but one thing is we represent these indigenous families. We make sure their kids are in school, that they don't get sent home from school, that their parents don't get all walked over. And so the community where the building is located is a community of indigenous families, of indigenous people. They settled there about 25, 30 years ago. So a lot of them, I have to use a translator to speak to their parents sometimes. I need an 8-year-old girl to translate from Spanish to Mixteco or Spanish to Triqui and then to the parent and then back to me. So that's a really interesting thing. And now, after this is our 4th year, we started with me and Kristen, 2 girls, not knowing what we were doing whatsoever. And we met a lot of people, made a lot of connections, and God brought people to us. And now there's 23 people working there. And now I can leave, and things keep going on. They're at Oasis right now, and I'm not there. That's great. So this might seem like kind of a cheesy picture, but this is really what my point is to you. I like talking about Oasis. It's a great place, and I love it. But really, that's not what matters. The place doesn't matter. The fact that it's beautiful doesn't matter. The fact that people are happy there doesn't even really matter, because what matters more is the reason. Why was that building put there? Why are people happy to be there? And the only reason, the only real answer to that is Jesus. And you can visually enjoy an oasis. You can think about it, man, it would be nice to be there. And then when you're at Oasis, you feel that. You're like, man, it's nice to be here. People obviously like being here. But the question I have, or the thing I want to leave with you guys that you can think about, is do people say that about you? Do they say that when they have an encounter with you, when they have some kind of experience with you? Because ultimately, the real Oasis, I think I said that at the end of that video, is Jesus. And he says he's the bread of life. He's the living water. Anyone who comes to me won't be thirsty. They'll have eternal life. And the reason Oasis is so special is because of this. It's because that was the mission. That was why people bought that piece of land, whoever, I don't know how many years ago. That's why we started this program. That's the ultimate motivation, is to bring people to know Jesus and to experience that rest and to experience rejuvenation through him, to experience new life through him. And so I want to kind of explain that an oasis shouldn't really be considered a place, like a physical place. It's more a way of being. You can be that for somebody else. Jesus was that for us. And not everybody can graduate from Pepperdine and move down to Mexico and start a program. Like, that's not something everyone can do, and you shouldn't expect everyone to do something that crazy. You can't expect everyone to run an orphanage of 100 kids down in Mexico either. Like, you can't really evaluate your life or your significance or your job or your actions in that kind of way. And a lot of times, because I'm described as a missionary, I feel that people do that. I feel that they sort of put missionaries on some kind of pedestal and want to praise them a lot. And I don't really agree with that. It's an awkward sort of feeling, because to me, I'm just doing what God enabled me to do and what I made myself available to do for Him. And I think that everybody in your life, if you want to serve God and you want your faith to go hand in hand with your works and your works to go hand in hand with your faith, you need to make yourself available to God. And when things come up, do them. If they're for the benefit of God, for the benefit of sharing this type of oasis life with somebody, this type of rest or this type of rejuvenation, then that's really what's important. So the point is that you guys can be an oasis for non-Christians. You don't have to have a place called an oasis. Your church doesn't necessarily have to be an oasis. But you and your life, when you're walking around, wherever you guys are from, whatever you do, if people encounter you and they're drawn to you and you're a light in your community and people experience a joy that you're giving off, they'll want to know more. And if that's the whole purpose. If people want to know more about why are you the way you are, there's something attractive about that. That's your opportunity. That's your window. That's your door to bring people in to know Jesus and to bring people into a place in their life where they are experiencing something like an oasis. So there's one verse that I would like to read. It's from Isaiah 58. It's an interesting chapter that's about true fasting and kind of questions the motivations of why do people fast? What are the reasons and motivations for your fasting? And it's kind of reevaluating and making you reflect on fasting in general. But near the end of it, there's this verse that says, "If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and the malicious talk, and if you spend yourselves on behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness, and your night will become like the noonday. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. You will be like a well-watered garden and like a spring whose waters never fail." A lot of times in Baja, in Mexico, I get really depressed. It's not easy to live there, and I feel like there's a lot of oppression, there's a lot of pointing fingers, there's malicious talk. But like it says here, this is a hopeful verse for me. It says, if you spend your time on the behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, your light will rise in the darkness. And in this community in Mexico, you see the darkness, you feel it, you know it's there. But I think when you dedicate your life to God and serving Him and making that your priority, then your light will rise in the darkness. And the Lord will guide you always and will satisfy your needs. And that's, I think, my story, how I started this whole Oasis program. Although I didn't talk about all the obstacles we ran into and all the problems we had. But I can say that the Lord guided us and He satisfied our needs. And He really blessed this program. And He's using it to bless a lot of families in that area. So that's all I really wanted to share with you. So I'm going to use the last 15 minutes for you guys to talk, ask me questions, or share whatever you would like to share with the group. Anybody? Yes.
Oh, you're 23 people. Are they locals?
They're all locals, yeah. I'm right now, I'm the only one that came there from somewhere else. Except there's one intern, and she's from Canada, and she's about to leave. She's there for 8 months, and then she goes back. But all the others are people who live in the town, who I met there randomly at the cafe or at a gym or on the street corner. So, yeah, it's a very interesting team, and most of them are Christians. And some of them, interesting, are second-generation missionaries who their parents moved down, they're Americans, who moved down 30 years or so ago to this town and raised their family there. So they're technically Mexicans, these kids, but they're they look white, but they're more Mexican. They've lived their whole lives in Mexico. So we have a few second-generation missionaries there who are, I guess, were born into being a missionary and are now working there at this program. And they're perfectly bilingual, and it's great to have them there.
Is it fully supported now?
Yes, kind of. Most of the support right now comes from two major sources, one being my home church in North Carolina, which is Providence Road Church of Christ. They actually weren't supporting me when I first went down there. They didn't know I went down there. My youth minister found out like a year later and said, "Why aren't we supporting you?" And I said, "I don't know." And he said, "Well, why don't you put in a proposal at the Mission Oversight Committee?" And I said, "That sounds so formal." But I did, and they decided that, you know, I was one of their own. I grew up in their youth group. They were the reason, really, that I went down there, because they facilitated all those trips to the City of Children. And so they started supporting, and they have been one of the biggest supporters now. So my home church, and then one of the businessmen who purchased the property sold his business and made a large donation. And that's slowly running out, though. We've been using that to operate, and it's about to run out pretty soon. So that's where most of the support comes from.
What are long-term plans?
Long-term plans are to find more support or stop serving food, cut costs, either find more support or find a way to make it, have there be more local support. That's one thing I've been working on this past year, is to get local donations and local support from some of the agricultural companies that are actually in the area. And one really nice thing is that one of the biggest ones, which is Driscoll's, you might be familiar with it, has come to us on their own and has said that they want to fund our program because they really are really impressed with it. And we are helping the employees, their employees' children, with a lot of the issues that they can't help them with. You know, they provide a job and they can pay these employees, but then some of the other issues, a private company can't address them, but a program like Oasis can. So Driscoll's has taken an interest, and they would like to donate to us through their philanthropy program, but we have to be a registered Mexican nonprofit. So we're working on that process right now of actually registering in Mexico, so we're legally an entity there and can receive local donations.
Carly, I know a similar program to a much smaller scale was done at Colony 89 by a young lady from our congregation. And it was successful, but she spent a year there and returned to the States. Is there any plan, because these all seem to be very successful, to do that in some with all the other Baja churches in that area?
Yeah, there has been interest expressed in that too. Like I mentioned, it's really cool that there's a network of these churches, and there has been interest expressed in that. I just don't know how it would look like. The good thing is about this is that I would be delighted if somebody came in and said, "We just want to copy your program, give us all your information and advice, and go do it." And I think in San Quintin, the town south of us, they have started something similar to this on a much smaller scale. Just a lot of those other churches don't have a building like Oasis. They have a building that's like their temple building, where they have the Sunday morning worship, but they don't have buildings with classrooms and kitchens and a big patio area. So I think that's been an obstacle for some of them. But that is another one of the long-term goals, is that we also work with a women's ministry, and they just bought a new piece of land and are going to build a permanent location, and they would like to have an Oasis program on their same property for all the kids that live there at the women's shelter, because the women come with their children. When they have 10 residents, they have 23 children. So it's just as much a children's ministry as it is a women's ministry. And they have also come to us and said, "We really like this program. We would like to do it at our property." And we're going to hopefully in the next 3 years help them, when their new piece of land is developed, help them to have that on their at their ministry as well.
So aside
duplicating
from financial monthly support or whatever, what other physical needs you need, like toothpaste, things like that?
Yeah, school supplies. School supplies
is...
there's a list on the website.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, one of the obstacles that we run into a lot is that kids stop studying for a lot of reasons. And one of the reasons that seems so simple and absurd is that they don't have a notebook. Or teachers will send the kids home for not having notebooks. They need a notebook for every subject, and if they don't have them, I'll see them on the street and I'll be like, Leonardo, why didn't you go to school today? I don't have a notebook. My teacher sent me home. I'm like, that makes no sense. So we give them notebooks and they go to school. And they can't afford 8 notebooks per semester for each class. So, and when you have 6 children in elementary school, they all need 8 notebooks and they need them every 3 months, that adds up pretty quick. And so we provide school supplies and then the uniforms. I know you know about the uniforms. All kids in Mexico have to wear uniforms to school. And the uniforms change every year and you can't hand them down and they're expensive. You can't even just walk into a store and buy them. You have to buy the fabric and then have someone go make the skirt. And it's just complicated. So a lot of families pick which kids they can afford to pay for uniforms for, and those kids will study, and the other kids won't. And that's when the cycle continues. When these kids can't finish elementary school and middle school, they have no options for work. Their only option is in the field, and that option only leads to a daily type living. Like you eat what you earn from that day, and there's no possibility for any kind of improvement in your life situation. So we're trying to minimize those obstacles so that kids can stay in school by providing uniforms, school supplies, birth certificates, things they need to study that often they can't get on their own. So.
What age do the kids start working in the field?
13.
So
they are allowed.
Yeah,
we've had a few who have dropped out of school who I've had to have conversations with, and it's a hard conversation because they would rather not be hungry than go sit in a classroom at school. So they have this option. I can go work. I can make 100 pesos today and go buy something to eat. Or I can sit in a boring classroom, overcrowded classroom, and listen to this teacher who's not even paying attention to me. So,
getting pressured by their families.
And yeah, and the families pressure them to work because then they earn more money for the family. But we do have some girls who are 13 and 14 who've already started working in the fields. And if they go with a parent, that's legal. They can work in the field if they're 13-year-olds, if 13 years old, if one of their parents is with them.
Like in the summer, the groups come to visit you?
Sometimes, yeah. There are two groups that always come. One's from Indiana, and one is from Charlotte, North Carolina. And this year, a new group is coming from Otter Creek in Nashville. And the summer is a good time for the groups to come because we technically close in the summer. We have a five or six week break, and the building is available to anyone who wants to use it for anything. So that's when the groups come, and they'll turn the building into a medical clinic, they'll turn it into VBS for 400 kids, they'll turn it into wedding ceremonies, they've turned it into community meals for 600 people. So the summer is a good time because it's flexible and people can use the building and do different projects in the community that we normally can't do during the school year.
What's the typical day for you? It sounds like you're the CEO, the CFO, the Chief Marketing Officer.
Property manager.
Moments, yeah, property manager. What's a typical day, if you can, you can answer that, because I know no 2 days are the same.
Yeah. Well, typical day, I'll go buy the food for that day. I buy the food every day for the meal. We don't store it there because of rats and cockroaches and electricity bills. So we buy the food fresh every day. So I go to the store every morning and buy food for about 100 people. That takes up a chunk of time. Then I go to Oasis, open up the building, make sure everything is working, that there's no flooding or weird things like that, because some weird things have happened before, so I just make sure everything's okay. Kids start arriving. We actually have a morning program and an afternoon program. I didn't really explain that anywhere, but there are kids who come to us before school, and then they go into school at 1, and then they get out of school at 5. So we have a morning group, and then they're there with us, and then they leave. We have a short break, about an hour, good nap time. Mm-hmm. And then the afternoon group comes, and they're with us from about 1 to 5:30 or so. So I'm normally disciplining children who misbehave or dealing with graffiti issues, paying the bills, Making sure the teachers have everything they need, making sure there's ink in the printer, making sure there's paper, killing tarantulas, they're dealing with anyone who shows up at the gate. We get a lot of people who just show up, and so most of the day I'm responding to people who just show up, and it's either visitors who have been sent to us from someone who just want to come visit, or drunk men who are just wandering around and want something to eat, and we try to give them food sometimes, and or parents who come for some issue with their kids, or people who need something. A lot of people will come and ask me, this happens all the time, they'll just ask me to buy one package of diapers for them. And they'll come with their baby, and I know the baby, I know the mom, I know their family, and she's like, I don't have any more diapers, can you just give me 30 pesos to go buy the diapers? And I'll go with her, and we'll go buy diapers, and she'll go back to her house. So that happens all the time, every day, not just diapers, but cooking gas. A lot of time their gas runs out, so then they can't cook. So we'll go and help fill up their gas. So I'm doing all kinds of little things all day long. No day is the same. We have a lot of plumbing issues, so I'm always making sure the water's working. Things like that. Sometimes I teach when kids... I was a teacher, so I used to do that. But so when teachers can't come, I cover them. That's about it. Feed the pit bull. It's a normal day.
I don't know how many of you actually know Carly, but of course I came associated with her with the City of Children, but she has a great deal of tenacity. And, you know, I have a daughter that's in her 30s and a little older, and I would not think of her being out there by herself like Carly has been, but she does a great job. And she mentioned something in talking about, you know, she feels uncomfortable with praise. But the key to her is, to me anyway, is that she allows God to work through her. And so those things don't overwhelm her. But it is, she's been out there a long time and a lot of times by herself. And she'll call Misha, one of our Baja Missions guys, and probably give him a little
bodyguard.
It's a great work. If your congregation is interested in being involved in something that really has some substance to it and it's really having an impact, or you want to just send stuff to Carly, you can do that. And, school supplies, toothpaste, anything of that nature would be a great help.
Yep. One thing that I wanted to mention too is that something that I like about Oasis is that the kids can stay in the program as long as they want to. And I was telling my mom the other day that I was trying to think of how many kids do we have who have been there since day one. Since day one, when we didn't really know what we were doing, when we said, we're going to start an after-school program, bring your children. And there are two kids came to my mind off the top of my head. There's a boy named Giovanni and a girl named Myra. And these two kids are still in the program 4 years later. And it doesn't seem like they've changed one bit in the last 4 years. But what's really cool is that their teachers are they've been in the same classroom the whole time. So I was the other day talking to one of my teachers saying, you know, I have to move up Giovanni. He's in sixth grade now. Like, I have to bump him up to the next class. And this teacher was crushed. And he's like, you can't take Giovanni away from me. He's like, you can't take him out of my class. Like, he's been in my class for 4 years. You can't. How can you move him out of my class? And he started going crazy. And I was like, you know, I really don't have to move him out of your class. Like, it's okay. Calm down. But I like that because these teachers, a lot of them come because they want to also. They get a small stipend, but the stipend they get is about $8 per day that they're there. So that's not a lot. I mean, I guess down there it is more, obviously, than here. But they don't come for the money. They've never come for the money. And so there's a lot of these local teachers who are amazing. And they love these kids. And the relationships that they've formed with the kids, that's one thing that makes Oasis really unique and special, is that they're actually mentoring them. They hang out with them outside of Oasis. They take them to get ice cream. They see them on the road and give them a ride. They ask them if they've done their homework. They go visit their mom and dad. They get invited to their birthday parties. We go to their graduations. So it's much more than just an after-school program where we're teaching addition and subtraction to a few elementary school kids. Like, these teachers know the children, and they want to know them, and they want to be there for them, and they go above and beyond and actually have sincere relationships with a lot of the children. And that's something that is invaluable, because these kids oftentimes and their families, they don't have those kinds of relationships. They're family lives are quite depressing, and it's just very valuable that they have some place they can go to, someone they can go to when they need to, and somebody that person is a Christian, the place is a Christian place, and they know that whatever influence we're leaving behind, it's a positive one, it's a good one, and that's one thing about Oasis that I really love, is that those kids, I have some kids that will probably be in the program, this is my dream too, all the way through university. We have there's one boy who was with us on day one of the opening of Oasis, who is in his last year of high school, and next year starts college. And I remember telling him, his name is Octavio, and I told him, I was like, Octavio, I never want money to be a reason for you to quit studying. And I was like, I don't know how it will ever happen, but I'll make sure that you don't ever quit studying for a financial reason, for lack of financial resources. And he sent me a text message a few days ago and said, help me to find an apartment in Ensenada, because he wants to go study in Ensenada at the university there. And he doesn't know where to live. So hopefully we can find some way to help him out there. But I know he sent me that message because he knows that I care and that I'll help him. And that's really an incredible thing. So hopefully our first kid will go all the way to college, and that's what I dream of seeing. That and repeated multiple times.
What would Brittany do?
Brittany is a girl at his church who has decided she wants to come down and live with me in January when she graduates. So she will do a lot of what I do. She'll be one of the teachers, probably with the little kids, because that's what she does. She likes to teach the little ones. Her Spanish is fairly good, so there's no problem there. And she'll probably be there full time every day, all day, helping with everything. She's going to make a 2-year commitment, I think, to living down there.
Is the local minister or approaching the families that you minister?
Yeah, one of the other nice things about Oasis right now is there's a guy who lives on the property named Miguel. And Miguel is acting kind of as a youth minister at the church across the street on the corner. So, like, the girl in the video who got baptized, Miguel baptized her. And so he's kind of our connection into the church, because he is always at the church, and he's working with the teens there, and he's also working with the teenagers at Oasis, and being that bridge between the two. Yeah, so it's nice to have him around, because he lives at the Oasis building. So sometimes we've had people come to our gate who are just asking for prayers, and I'm like, Miguel, can you go pray with them? And so it's really good to have him there. He has certain gifts that I don't necessarily have, so it's really nice to have him there.
Website or some way to get in touch with your work?
Thank you for saying that. I also have little cards if anybody wants one of those. It has the same information on it. Brittany actually made the website. So you don't have to write it down. The girl in my arms, that's actually Myra, and that picture was 4 years ago. And so she's quite bigger now. And she lives right in front of Oasis. Like, she is our next door neighbor. She'll probably be running Oasis in 10 years. Because she's not going anywhere. And so Myra is a really special girl. Any other questions? Well, I guess that's it then. Thank you all for coming.